Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here on the show today. We're going to be spending some time talking about the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. We'll be looking at some of these outstanding field trips that they have and talk about the group's 40th anniversary, I think. Yeah, David Clutter, one of our guests. David, good to see you. He's executive director of the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. It's good to see you in the studio. Nice
indeed
to have you here.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, appreciate it.
Well, good to see Shelley Torkelson as well. Shelley, good to see you. Thanks for joining in.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Larry.
She is the communications director of the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. And so we're going to be talking about the foundation and a lot about these trips that you and I can take some part in. And I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've been on some of those trips in past years. What did you take away from the experience? What questions do you have about the work of the Natural Resources Foundation, what they do every year? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. Let's just, in general, well, and to be specific, what's the mission of the Natural Resources Foundation?
Sure, David. The mission of the foundation is to, you know, protect Wisconsin's lands, waters, and wildlife. And we do that by providing funding, leading partnerships, and connecting all people with nature. And certainly the field trip program is, you know, one of the main ways that we connect people with nature.
Yeah, what's the history? You know, it's 40 years now.
40 years, yeah. This year is our 40th anniversary. So founded in 1986. You know, we were founded really as a friends group to the DNR. So at that time, budgets had been dropping, particularly for endangered species work, state natural area work. And they, I think Bruce Braun, who was deputy secretary at that time, was sort of tapped by the secretary of the DNR to come up with some options for how we could think about providing additional revenue for land management and, you know, assistance with endangered species work. And so at that point, you know, Bruce thought establishing a nonprofit as a friends group to the DNR that would help raise money, private capital through grants, individual donors, et cetera, to bring more resources to bear to help manage some of these really critical areas around the state.
Yeah. And there have been some success, more than one success, for sure. And maybe it'd be worth it to talk about a few of those successes.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I can pitch to my colleague Shelley here, too. Yeah. But I would just say that, you know, over the years, we've provided about $14 million in funding. Pretty modest. But, you know, today we're putting about $1 million on the ground for conservation throughout the state. And we'd like to double that, you know, in the next 5 years or so.
Yeah, I'll just add that, you know, we did start as a friends group to the DNR, as David mentioned, but we've grown to be so much more than that.
Oh, yeah.
And now
mm-hmm.
we support conservation projects all over the state, from the Northwoods to the prairies in the southern part of the state, from the Mississippi to the Driftless, just every county in Wisconsin we've supported conservation projects there, and not just through the DNR, although we continue to partner with them
Absolutely.
Quite a lot, but also other conservation nonprofits and there's just so much that we can accomplish, thanks in part to our members and our supporters, which are partially, you know, come to the Natural Resources Foundation because of field trips. That's where mm-hmm. a lot of people find out about us. And so
yeah.
it's a good way to get people involved with conservation.
Give me an example of one of the projects that you said you've done a lot. What would be an example? I mean, for somebody might be thinking, well, maybe I want to apply or do something or get involved in some way.
Well, if you're talking about a really fun historical example, one of our earliest projects that we supported was the Trumpeter Swan Recovery Program through the Wisconsin DNR. And that was our flagship project, as
yeah.
we call it, because it was one of the big projects that we got behind in the early years, back in the late 80s, when we first started out as a young foundation. And that program, I mean, we can't take... it's not our project, so we can't say that we accomplished the great success of that project because there were so many different partners involved, but we're so happy to have funded it and be a part of that, because I think there were fewer than 100 trumpeter swans at that time, and now there's over 10,000 trumpeter swans, and they're not an uncommon bird to see anymore. So
that's right.
Yeah,
you know, we're a partnership organization, so we've partnered with International Crane Foundation, you know, DNR Fish and Wildlife on whooping crane reintroduction. You know, there have been a number of things over the years. State natural areas have been kind of our bread and butter. And, you know, we put millions of dollars into state natural area management. So as an organization, we're not, you know, we're a facilitator, convener, and funder. You know, we're not doing boots on the ground conservation, but we do play an important role.
Margaret in Fort Atkinson has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I just wanted to ask, I'm somewhat handicapped. 2 years ago when I tried to sign up, all the tours I was interested, well, we did go on a couple, but we're full. Is there any way on the 8th I can sneak in to, there's three in my area I'd like to attend.
What's the best way to do that, Shelley?
What's the best
it's
way
tough.
To sneak
in? It's like
in.
Getting rock concert tickets.
They are very popular trips, and registration day, which is April 8th this year at noon on the dot, it's a very busy day each year because there are a lot more people who want to go on these trips than there are spaces on the trips because they are volunteer-led in most cases. Sometimes they go to locations where they can't handle a lot of foot traffic. Maybe there's sensitive species there. Maybe they're not open to the public normally. So there are limited spaces. So we do encourage people to renew their memberships with NRF in advance and get that wish list of trips ready so that on registration day, they're ready to go. But as far as accessibility, we do have we have been putting a lot more energy into making more accessible options on field trips available to people. We have more information as well in the field trip guidebook and in our online trip listings about trail surfaces, elevation changes, other things that people might be considering when they're deciding if their physical abilities are a good fit for that trip, you know, whether that trip is ADA accessible. You know, we have a good number of ADA accessible trips, I think 32, 30-ish, somewhere around there this year. So there's a lot to choose from. And even if the trips that you wanted the most are filled on registration day, we always have around 100 trips that still have spaces available after registration day is over. So you can always check back later and add more trips to your list.
And you need to be a member of the Natural Resources Foundation.
Yeah, that's right. You know, to get on our field trips, you know, we require a membership. Memberships are generally $35. Yeah. Trips average about $25 per trip. But yeah, you know, Shelley and I were talking earlier, and you know, get your membership now because you're going to want to get your trips lined up. You have an access code, you know, at noon on the 8th, so you got to be ready. And you have to have your trips ready because, yeah, it is very competitive. And, you know, I worked with the foundation between 2004 and 2010, and I came back about 6.5 years ago as ED. But when I joined in 2004, we were leading 49 field trips.
Yeah.
You know, today we're leading 280 unique field trips, and with repeats, it's over 300.
And it's just an amazing number to me. And this guidebook, it's so much. And I love the guidebook because you also have some nice photos to go along with everything else that really sort of really up your wishes. And in the front of the guidebook, you've got sort of color-coded the physical demands.
That's right.
Of the trip. So there's very easy ones, there's easy, there's average, there's challenging, and then there's extreme. Those are off-trail, they're very steep, or can be. They might be long, 5 miles or 5+ miles for the most extreme. But, you know, you can also go on one that's less than a half a mile on level terrain.
And we do partner with Accessibility Wisconsin, and they provide, you know, an all-terrain outdoor wheelchair for folks who might want or need that.
I was going to ask about that because those have become more popular. I mean, the problem with them is partly is the expense involved, but they're fantastic.
And they're free of charge on these field trips.
Yeah.
You know, you have to register or reserve one through Accessibility Wisconsin. It's Accessibility Wisconsin. Yeah. But yeah, you know, it's they're an all-terrain vehicle, so they you know,
seem to be able
to
get
anywhere. Impactful generally on the landscape, so low impact. But boy, I've driven one of these myself, and they're fantastic. You can take these around in pretty, you know, pretty rugged terrain.
Wooded terrain. Yeah. It's I haven't driven one, but I've seen videos and so forth of them,
cool.
And it's really, really amazing thing for people who otherwise wouldn't be able to get out.
That's right.
They're really fun to drive. It's like driving a miniature tank.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
really fun.
Cool.
Yeah, you're not going to be speeding and zooming around on those.
No.
But I suppose you
they'll keep you safe, though.
No, they will keep you safe for sure. So you need to have your membership renewal taken care of, and then you get your access code. Mm-hmm. And then there's rules, trip rules, but they're nothing that are out of the ordinary.
No, not at all. And I think what, you know, Christine Tanzer and Kim Kreidinger, you know, run our field trip program. And I think, you know, Larry, what you had mentioned before with the very easy to extreme really gives people a good idea of what they're getting into. With folks, and, you know, we've run into this before, you know, for folks who have diabetes, you know, make sure that you have sugar available, particularly if you're going to be, pushing limits at all. But we try to work with our field trip leaders to make sure they're prepared for any number of things. So, you know, they'll have first aid kits and, you know, lifesavers available and those sorts of things. So, but it's always good for people to think about, kind of their own situation and what they're going to need as they go on these field trips.
But give me some examples of the trips. I think that there's such a range.
So
I mean, we
could
spend
where
the whole
start?
Hour. We could spend the whole hour here, Shelley. But we could give us the range of kinds of things that are in.
I would be just rattling off different types of trips for about 10 minutes straight, but I'll limit myself a bit. I mean, birding trips. We have a lot of people who love birding. We have bird banding trips, so you can, you know, watch as scientists band birds and hear about how they study them. We've got a trip where you look for mussels in a river. You're actually wading through a river. People rave about that trip. We have one where you learn logging history in northern Wisconsin. That's, I think, a newer one, so that's pretty exciting. I kind of want to go on that one myself. There's one about the interactions between trout streams and Karner blue butterflies. There's,
that's cool. I mean,
yeah. You've got paddling trips of all sorts, pontoon rides, foraging trips, butterfly tagging. I did a monarch tagging trip, and it was so fun. We do monarch tagging trips every year. We provide them. And it's like going hunting for a bug. You know, you're stalking the butterfly. You've got your net in hand. It's very exciting. And then you nab one, and you take it back to the scientist for tagging. It's very fun.
I got to tag one once.
Did you?
That is cool.
Did you put the sticker on yourself?
Oh, yeah.
They have a teeny tiny little butterfly-sized sticker.
Yeah.
It goes on there. But there's so many more. There's fly fishing for beginners this year. That one's pretty cool. We have a train ride through Tiffany Bottoms up north. We've got mushroom trips, both searching for mushrooms just to identify them, and also edible mushrooms, growing your own mushrooms, learning about owls, learning about rare plants, and learning about frogs, and learning about bogs. Mm-hmm. Boat rides, as I said, forest bathing. We were just talking
Japanese
about forest,
forest bathing. Yeah, yeah.
That was
forest
one of my favorites.
Forest bathing,
yes.
Yeah.
Have you heard of forest bathing at all, Larry?
Oh, bathing as in
bathing,
like
yes.
B-A-T-H.
Yes.
Oh, I thought forest baiting at first, and I don't know.
No, we don't have any baiting
bait
trips.
Those trees. But what's forest bathing?
It's basically similar to hiking, but there's a bit of mindfulness baked into it. You basically go out in nature and use all five senses. You're thinking about what you're smelling, what you're hearing. You may close your eyes. You may feel the textures of the different plants that are growing near
Stop
you.
Poison ivy.
just, yeah, not the poison ivy so much. Careful what you touch, careful what you eat. But forest bathing, we have several different forest bathing trips. One of them is paired with a Japanese tea ceremony, which David and I were just talking about, and that's a really great experience. Where at the very end, one of my favorite moments when I went on that trip was getting to eat little fried fiddlehead ferns that were just harvested from that same property that you just hiked through. That was delicious and just very unique experiences.
Well, the you know what amazes me is the talent that you have out there to lead these. I mean, I was one of these birding ones. Holy cow! It happened to be a DNR guy too. There's a pretty broad range in the first place of people who do these lead these.
Yeah, you got it.
Right?
Yeah. What is it, Shelley? You know, DNR leads about, what, 40%?
That sounds about right.
Quite a few.
About 40%. So, we get some of the top ecologists and biologists in the state, you know, whether they're an agency employee or a volunteer. I mean, some of the volunteers here throughout the state are incredibly sharp. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was really impressed with, He's identifying bird songs so quickly, you know, and it was at the time of the year when there was a lot of singing going on. I thought, how in the heck?
Yeah.
But I learned a few things. The experience of it would have been enough, but I did pick up a point or two.
Good.
As the time went along. You need to be a member of the foundation, but then the trip, there's not a standard price on the trips, are there, or on the experiences?
Most of them are around $18, and all of that money, in addition to memberships, goes to support conservation across the state. So while you're out there having your cool nature adventure and learning about something at a really deep level with those expert leaders that you're mentioning, you know that you're also not just enjoying nature for yourself, but you're helping others enjoy it by supporting conservation with that fee.
Mm-hmm. And it's fun to just be with a group, too.
A group of like-minded people. Yeah, it's wonderful.
That part of it I liked a lot as well. As we look, you're right in the middle of your 2024 through 2027 strategic plan, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Maybe talk about some of the goals. Go back and talk about maybe some things you've accomplished and what you're hoping for down the road.
Yeah, well, yeah, great question, and thank you. You know, our strategic planning is a very ambitious one. Ah. And, you know, I think the foundation is taking a bit of a departure. So, you know, I like to describe us as, you know, kind of the three legs to our stool is, you know, we're a grantor and a grantee. We hold permanent endowments just like a community foundation, and then we run program like the field trip program. But with our conservation work, we're really trying to think more at a landscape scale, right? So, you know, connectivity is going to be very important, particularly as we're facing a biodiversity crisis, a climate crisis. We need to think a little bit differently about how we're collaborating with partners, how we're really driving more investment into the high priority areas throughout the state. So in our current strategic plan, we've worked with partners like the DNR, the Nature Conservancy, Gathering Waters, and others to identify, you know, these really unique landscapes. And that data is already out there in the Wildlife Action Plans and TNC's Eco Regional Plans. But we're really trying to take a fresh look at how can we be more strategic about where we make these conservation investments. And so that really is a partnership model, and it's really, not a departure for us, but we're being more intentional about where we're making investments, and we believe that's very important for conservation moving forward.
It's interesting. How do you make those kinds of decisions? I mean, you don't have to tell me exactly what you're doing, but... The strategic part of it. I mean, what goes into making the strategy?
Yeah, well, for starters, it's really relying on a lot of the work that's been done over many, many years, right, in identifying these high-priority areas. So in our wildlife action plan, they've identified conservation opportunity areas, or what they call conservation opportunity areas. So these are areas where there's, you know, great potential for oak savanna restoration, for instance.
Okay.
And then, so, you know, the strategy is going to be dependent on the context, the landscape context, as well as the partners in that landscape or working in that landscape. But we're trying to really engage our partners and understand what they need, how we can provide value, if at all, and then work towards solutions. And also, you know, collaborative fundraising is going to be an important part of this as well. You know, how can we work collaboratively to knock down some of these dollars from the Doris Dukes and the Waltons of the world, you know, and these bigger national foundations and international foundations. So we're really trying to think about how, too, we can, you know, get greater resources from outside the state to drive into some of these high priority areas.
Boy, as I'm thinking about that, it could involve a lot of people. I mean, even on your end.
Oh, yeah.
How many people do you have working through the foundation?
We just added our 17th?
You think we're at
17.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a great growing team. And I tell you, I just have never worked with such a capable and amazing group of people. So, you know, we're really excited. We feel like we're at a point where we can really start launching as an organization and having more impact. And that's our goal. You know, we're doing a great job, I think, programmatically as well as through, you know, investments that we make in conservation. But we obviously want to grow that. The need is huge. You know, state budgets are not changing. Federal budgets are not changing. So I think the private sector does have an important role to play.
Yeah. And Shelley, let me go back to you, because I really didn't ask you. I said you're communications director, but what is that role, and how does your role fit in with the rest of it?
I just go on the radio all day. It's not as exciting as the parts of our work that David does in the conservation team and the field trips team. But, you know, I do our newsletter. I send out press releases. I edit everything. It's not as exciting as some other things we could talk about, I'll be honest. But I love it.
No, well, Shelley's work is, you know, that's how the world sees our organization.
Yeah.
So it's
trying to engage
important.
More people with conservation. Yep.
Yeah, and don't belittle that.
No.
As someone who's taught communications at the University of Wisconsin for 100 years, it feels like it's very needed for the core of and success.
You got it.
Of any organization, including this one. Yep. And you're doing such great work. I'm telling you, where should people go? I want to get involved, and I want to, how do I go online and get my memberships and all that?
Yep, our website is wisconservation.org, so that's the place to go, wisconservation.org. You can become a member, yep. You can become a member there. You can check the entire field trip guidebook and make your little wish list of field trips to go on this year. Check out our conservation work. Follow us on social media, all that good stuff.
Yeah, wisconservation.org. O-R-G.
That's right.
And I'm highly recommending that you do that, because you're going to learn a whole lot. You're going to have a lot of fun when you sign up for some of these field trips.
Yeah.
Thank you both very much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. And I'm sorry we didn't even get to talk about the film that you're going to be doing in combination with PBS Wisconsin, but we'll maybe next time you come around, we'll do that.
That'd be great.
Sounds good. Great.
Thank you so much.
Well,
thanks,
and Larry, congratulations on your retirement.
Oh,
you're coming.
Yeah, well, I'll be talking about that tonight in Wausau, which will be a lot of fun. David Kletter is the executive director of the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. And Shelley Torkelson is the communications director of the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. And coming up, a guy they both know pretty well, I bet, Matt Reitz, is executive director of the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. And he's next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.